What is the greatest zombie movie ever made? Spending a year or more trying to answer that question is a task that only an insane person would ever undertake. That's exactly what we're going to do. That's right, everybody. Season 3 of the March Mad Men podcast is now officially underway. I'm John Evans, your host on this journey through the graveyards, morgues, and post-apocalyptic ruins of the zombie subgenre. As we embark tonight, I am joined by three men with the knowledge and untreated insanity to give zombie movies the post-mortem they deserve. First, as always, my good friend and podcast rival, horror screenwriter Vikram Wheat. Next, listeners may remember author Luke Merrick from our deep dive into John Carpenter's Halloween. Luke will be a regular with us this season. And lastly, we have a special guest tonight, a newcomer to the show, writer and podcaster, Trevor Stevenson. Trevor, thanks so much for joining us, man. How are you doing tonight? Let everybody know a little bit about yourself, how you know Vic and Madman Emeritus Rich Eckersley, the whole deal.
Yeah, it's crazy because like I obviously I hate to say long time listener, first time caller, but that's empirically true. So, I mean, I definitely I've known you guys for a long time. Luke, it's nice to meet you. I'll go ahead and say that. But I've known Vic for well over a decade. He and I were actually I met him through the writing group that included Rich way back in the day. And it kind of rolled from there. And of course, John, you've been over to my house so many times for Halloween now. It's crazy. It's great to actually be here because I so many memories of listening to you guys and playing video games at the same time, you know, multitasking. That's what I do.
Yeah, Trevor likes the video games. That's something I'd like to pick up a little bit more. I'm certainly a Resident Evil guy, appropriate to the conversation. Yeah, it's a classic. Luke, I know you've spent some time abroad recently. Give us a couple of highlights of that adventure, man.
Yeah, I just got back from North Macedonia, Bulgaria, and Romania. So I went to the castle that inspired Dracula. From what I understand when I got there, Dracula never actually lived in the castle. Just the author Bram Stoker saw it and got creeped out and then wrote Dracula and pulled Vlad Tepes into it, sort of. But yeah, it was a great trip. And that's why I'm drinking coffee tonight instead of any kind of alcohol, because I'm concerned that I'm still on Bulgaria time and will face plant at some point or be wired until 4 a.m. Could go either way. We just don't know.
Do you have any idea of what time it would be where you're coming from right now?
Yeah, it's about 9 hours ahead of where we are. So it's 8 p.m. here. So there it is 5 in the morning.
Oh, so you've already pulled a all-nighter here.
I have, yes. I'm at the tail end of an all-nighter, and I've been staying up till like 1 in the morning to try and defeat it, the time zone shift that I'm on, but then I wake up at 5:30 in the morning and start my day. It's just not working. So we have coffee. That hopefully fixes it.
I'll let you know if you start nodding off.
Yeah, there needs to be some kind of digital stick you could poke me with.
I wish I had a digital stick to poke our next guest, my good friend Vic, who's using fingers to indicate his displeasure with that intro. But Vic, you son of a bitch, man. Before we lock horns on movies, I guess I should ask what's new over there at Rattlesnake Ranch.
If you're drinking coffee, this is why God created Kahlua, right?
Oh, yes.
you can find the night, you find the right balance in your life, so that helps. The other thing I wanted to tell you is I was fortunate enough to go to Romania when I had one of the three films I had produced. One of them was being shot in Bucharest, and God, they flew me out there. By the grace of God, they were shooting nights. So I slept on the plane. I got there at 5 p.m. Their time. I went to the set at 7 p.m. I was there all night. And then I slept until 4 o'clock. I woke up. I tooled around Bucharest for a while. A lot of warnings about massage parlors there. So I hope you didn't need that. Because, boy, they were really serious about that. But the point is, I was there for about 3 days. But because we were on nights, I never got off of a Los Angeles sleep schedule. Like, I just came home and everything was exactly the way it was before I left.
That's convenient.
Yeah, it worked out.
That's pretty great.
What I'm hearing is that all Angelinos are basically Eastern European vampires.
Yes. And you're
it explains something.
Wrong. The other thing I'm going to say, which our listeners will have no idea about, but certainly two of you and Luke, I think to a lesser extent, will recognize, is that starting in 2020, when we went into lockdown, like many people, I was venturing out of the house almost never. And so I began to grow my hair out like I did in my 20s. And so what you will see for the first time in 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
I have cut my my 6-inch ponytail, which apparently was not long enough to donate to cancer patients, which I was sad about.
Not even children, because they're smaller.
Right? I don't know. I was like, we asked me at the place, we were like, can we donate this? And she was like, it's not long enough. And I was like, fuck you. And then they asked me to leave, but it's fine.
You just needed another 10 years to work on that, buddy. Get started on your next one.
Apparently, yes. I was not Rapunzel enough to help out. Anyways, that's been the biggest event, and I think I can feel confident in saying that.
You don't look like a weird hippie homeless man anymore. It's amazing.
No, I look like a balding middle-aged weirdo, which is probably more accurate.
No, you look sharp, man. You absolutely do. Yeah. Well, we know that Luke has coffee going. Vic, what is your special beverage of choice for this evening, this special edition of the March Madmen podcast?
Well, I have to say, I in very rare form, I was able to save opening it until we got to this point because we are opening a new season of the podcast, and I wanted to kick it off with the spilling of beer on my 10-year-old laptop. So here we go. You ready? There it is. Woo. That is a Bootleggers Brewery Golden Chaos Belgian style ale, which I believe is coming in at 8.5%. As John often says, I don't get out of bed for anything less than 8%. So
that's your session IPA, basically.
Yeah.
Thing of beauty.
For the audio listeners, Vic has a wonderful goblet there now brimming with Belgian goodness. That's a beautiful thing. Trevor, what do you have in the fridge? You don't have to necessarily open it yet, but let us know what you got going there.
Sure. Probably of everyone, I don't want to speak for Luke, but of everyone on this podcast, I'm probably the biggest beer snob in the sense that I am very hoity-toity about what I drink. I was fortunate enough to find one of the rare 4-packs of El Segundo's nuclear power plant. It comes out at the end of January, beginning of February every year. And it is their it's a West Coast triple IPA, mm-hmm. but the nuclear power plant is the quadruple IPA and it is 13.1%. It like fights all the way down. So it is delicious, but yes, it will knock you on your ass, which is why I was told to wait until we're probably like in hour 3 of this conversation. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, it definitely sounds potent enough to like create some radiation zombies, which is perfect for our show. That's
nice.
Lovely. Yeah, myself, I have the Return of the Living Haze, which I cannot vouch for the flavor yet. I got this with Vic actually a couple months ago, but I have diligently saved it for this podcast because it's got art that's very clearly and accurately inspired by one of my favorite zombie movies of all time, Return of the Living Dead. So I'm excited to be opening this bad boy at last, and hopefully it doesn't taste like piss.
Who makes Cheers. It, by the way?
Cheers. Beer Zombies Brewing Company.
Okay.
Yeah, household name. But yeah. Obviously, this was a selection based on the can art, but sometimes you can get lucky with that. Let's give it a go. Yeah, it's a solid, inoffensive hazy. Not super exciting, but it's good. Well, there goes our sponsorship.
Your enthusiasm is very thin there, John. I'm just going to tell you right now.
I didn't grimace, though, did I? No, it's very easy.
Not on camera.
Easy drinking.
I just want to point out that I was like priding myself on the fact that I waited until we were recording to open my beer, and John has been saving his beer for 3 months.
Yeah, I really have been. Oh yeah, Trevor, tell us a little bit about, you have a podcast of your own. Why don't we learn a little bit about that before we jump into the main event here?
Absolutely, yeah. And again, thank you for having me on. I feel like in the Venn diagram of like the audience that my podcast is going for and y'all's audience, there is going to be some crossovers. It's called Your Story Will Be Different. It's available on every platform that you can think of at this point. It is, if you're familiar with what an actual play podcast is, this is a narrative play podcast where off mic, I play a solo tabletop role-playing game. And then I act it out with music and sound effects. And right now, it just started this year. I think, depends upon when this episode's coming out, there should be like a dozen or so episodes out. It's a lot of fun. Please give it a listen and tell a friend.
Awesome. That sounds fantastic. Luke, I know you're a gamer yourself of the role-playing variety. Sound like something you might be interested in?
Yeah, I would check that out for sure. That sounds pretty great. Is there one particular game you play, or do you rotate through different games?
I've been rotating through, like, for some of the games that are like longer in length. My first three episodes are one game that's incredibly good. I recommend it so much. And then there's also some smaller ones. The episode that came out this past Tuesday, the episode's only 15 minutes long because it's a very short game, but it was a fun story to tell. So the next four episodes that are coming out are two-parters. And I basically they're every other week, so I'm set through May at this point. I'm working on June.
Okay, cool. And what's the pod called again?
Your Story Will Be Different.
I've listened to a few episodes, and it's great, and not just because Trevor has such a deep melodic ASMR type voice. I definitely, Trevor, I want you to know, I am definitely not touching myself while I'm.
I don't know how to respond to that, but thank you for listening nonetheless.
Could you talk just a little bit more for a second?
I mean, I can get closer to the microphone if you'd like.
Yeah, closer. Good.
This is more horrific than the movies we're about to talk about.
And with that, sadness is no longer the grossest thing we're going to talk about today.
Bold statement there, Vic. Bold statement there. Trevor, I'm sure you're familiar with the basic structure of our seasons, but just for the listeners' benefit, a little recap. We have a field of 64 movies that we need to finalize here tonight. We're calling this kind of our, we don't have to finalize it tonight, but we want to make some progress towards finalizing it tonight. Each season of the show starts out with usually 64, sometimes fewer movies that are grouped all of the NCAA tournament, the basketball tournament, in its structure. And so that means you've got four regionals, essentially, where we group certain types of films that have something in common. We group them together, and they're then seeded from like 16 being an underdog to number one being like a heavy favorite. And that's how we pair up the movies, and then they go head to head, two by two, and we vote to eliminate one at a time and move through the whole tournament to eventually end up with a single movie that will get the crown for that genre. And of course, we've done haunted house movies and slashers, and now here we are, it's time for the zombies.
Our haunted house champion was The Shining, against my preference, and our slasher champion was Texas Chainsaw Massacre, also against my preference. I look forward to seeing how the zombie movies go.
What were your favorites? Just to tell everyone again, what movies were not as good, but that in your deluded world should have won?
It was Halloween H2O for both.
All right, Vic, you're in fine form.
Indeed I am. No, for the haunted house films, my preference was Mike Flanagan's Oculus. And for the slasher films, my preference was John Carpenter's Halloween. You and Rich just fucked me. Didn't even buy me dinner.
Both these films that were bridesmaids, they made the final four, I should point out. And it's hard to pick one movie when you get down to four awesome films. And I have nothing bad to say about either of those movies, but there can only be one. There can only be one.
True. And if you want to hear John say something bad about them, just go back and listen to our old seasons.
Actually, I mean, Halloween, I did have a few nitpicks on, but Oculus, man, I don't have much bad to say about Oculus. I really love it. Okay.
Delicious light bulbs.
Yes. Light bulb.
Nice. Yeah.
First question, has everyone had a chance to at least, you know, take a gander at this bracket that we've got going in a Google Sheet?
All right, up right now.
Beautiful, beautiful. Let's like at least do half of the bracket, and then maybe we'll take a break from this and talk about zombies in general a little bit more, and then come back and do the other half. Preliminarily, and I'm open to nominees for other groupings, but I saw some commonalities. One of them being like people who are infected but still living, and they've somehow kind of gone crazy. Their impulse control, their violent urges, whatever the case may be, are running rampant. And so kind of calling those the crazies, somewhat in honor of George Romero's The Crazies. That film, of course, will be in this bracket along with the 2010 remake. And then we have another sub bracket, which I'm calling the funnies, kind of just in complement to the crazies. And this one is where you'll find your Shaun of the Dead and Zombieland and things of that nature that at least have more of a lighter satirical tone, or are, they don't have to be out and out comedies, but they should at least, you know, not be taking themselves too seriously.
I'm just glad that Dead Alive is under the funnies and not the crazies, because that movie, man.
Yes. Yes. I am a big fan of that movie, and it is hilarious. Absolutely. There was some debate, Vic. You were kind of trying to shoehorn in something else into The Crazies that didn't fit my paradigm. Do you still want to do that, or how are you feeling now about the way it's lining up?
I thought you had Train to Busan in the funnies.
You convinced me not to do that.
Thank you, Jesus. Okay.
Yeah, that was a hazy recollection of, you know, like schoolgirls fighting, you know, zombie, I don't know, like so just some somewhat goofier pairings of combatants in Train to Busan. It was probably not the right place for it. So thank you for that. Well,
I think this is going to be the biggest argument that we maybe have tonight. And that's a bold statement coming out of the gate, and I realized that. Hashtag Alive does not belong in the funnies. Now, that is not the radical statement that you think it is. But John and I started to have this argument on a text chain and decided immediately that we needed to move this to the podcast. I will make the case that Hashtag Alive should move somewhere else, which, by the way, John is wrong about its quality, but that's a separate argument. That needs to move into a different category, and that Cabin in the Woods should take its place in the funnies zombie category. What is everyone's immediate reaction to that bombshell that I just dropped?
We haven't heard from Luke yet. Luke, what are your thoughts on Cabin in the Woods as a zombie movie? And then I want to hear what Trevor thinks.
Well, I had never considered Cabin in the Woods a zombie movie before, but there's a few movies on this list that I'd never thought of as zombie movies, and here they are. So maybe I'm just thinking too narrowly about zombies. That's quite possible. Yeah, my immediate reaction is, let me think about that for a minute, I guess. But you have your hillbilly family of undead zombies, that's for sure, a zombie sequence.
Well, as we get into this, what I want to stress is a question that we've asked ourselves in previous seasons and trying to figure out where a particular movie fits. If it doesn't fit here, where does it fit? Like, what is the right answer for where it would go? And my argument for Cabin in the Woods is that for most of its runtime, your primary antagonists are zombies.
Most of the runtime, I'm questioning that. Trevor, what's your recollections of this movie and how it might fit into this paradigm or not?
I absolutely love Cabin in the Woods. I'd probably put it up there with Shaun of the Dead as being some of my favorite, like, horror but very smart films. I'm going to disagree with Vic there, because the main antagonist isn't necessarily the zombies themselves. It's the pseudo religious government organization that's running the entire thing. They're sending their pawns out to do their work. And in point of fact, there are so many other types of deaths in that. Somebody gets killed by a unicorn in that movie. I don't think that really, really makes it a zombie film overall. There are zombies in it, yes. And in point of fact, like I own this movie on Blu-ray. I see it all the time. They have the dry erase board that has all the different types of monsters on there with the bedding system. And there's multiple types of zombies on there. So consequently, it's one of those things where I'm like, is this specifically a zombie film? Because by that extension, you could call it a merman film, right? One of the characters yeah. killed by a merman in that.
That's how I think of it.
I hear a counterpoint coming.
The merman is on film much, much less than the murderous family.
Exactly.
But
he is memorable, though.
But wait, here's what I'm going to pose to you. So what subgenre would you put Cabin in the Woods into?
Well, I don't think that's terribly difficult, because we have kind of had this conversation before. And the way to think of this is, if we had endless seasons of this show, which we may or may not, I don't know, probably not, but that's would it eventually be covered?
We could do a season on movies set in a cabin in the woods, and it would qualify for that.
Yeah. I mean, we had a Halloween that did that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, but I mean, I think the category that we have been somewhat seriously kicking around is certainly the first 5 to 10 of these seasons that we would ever do would be cosmic horror. And that is where you get a lot of your Lovecraftian, interdimensional, you know, Cthulhu-esque stuff. And I think that The Cabin in the Woods is way more in that kind of mind-blowing, larger canvas kind of a horror film than it can be described as a zombie film. I mean, I will acknowledge they are the ones that get the most screen time, and I think they dominate act one of that movie, The Zombie Family. But for me, it's not even like, I think people would honestly, other than Vic, if you're like, oh, you know what my favorite zombie movie is? Cabin in the Woods. Like, if someone loves that movie, you would get an arched eyebrow, because it's just like, who thinks of it first as a zombie movie? It's just not the first thing you would say.
That was always going to be the argument against my position, which I'm not going to vehemently kick and scream against. But the cosmic horror in the film shows up in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, but it's the overarching principle that organized the whole little society that we see with Bradley Whitford and everybody else and the taking the bets and everything. Like, that's setting up something we don't totally understand, but it's there all the way. And then you find out at the end what all the twist is, the bigger implications.
That's true, but I think you could apply that same logic to something like The Beyond.
Well, The Beyond doesn't have a lot of logic.
Yes.
I know. Listen, Trevor and Luke, you can always get it, John, if you needle him on the Italian horror. That's his weak spot.
It's a soft spot. It's not entirely rational.
Yeah.
Right. But we can get into that a bit later. But I mean, I think like we could have a season where From Beyond, The Void, there are cosmic horror movies. Maybe not a 64 film tournament, but you know, more like the, you know, 24 or 32. Hmm. And I think it would be a fun season. I think it would be worth doing.
I'm not sensing a lot of support for my argument. So,
Vic, I think part of the argument there is this is personal taste on it. I don't think screen time should necessarily be a deciding factor upon like whether it's a zombie film or not, because by that logic, Jaws is a beach party movie.
I'm not disagreeing with you. What's your point? Jaws
beach blanket bingo versus Jaws in round one of the March Madness.
Jaws is a movie about local politics, Trevor.
Yes.
That's what Jaws is about.
But the villain in it doesn't have a ton of screen time, and as we all know, because of mechanical issues. So consequently, all of the tension is not with the shark in it, really.
On the contrary, the villain in Jaws is Murray Hamilton. We feel of screen time.
Okay. But you can see my point here.
If I wanted to, I suppose I could, but I don't, so I'm not.
We'll save Jaws for our local greedy bureaucrat season of the show.
Fair enough.
That'd be great.
But wait, how many of us have watched #Alive?
I have not. That's one of the ones I have not seen.
Trevor, no?
Nope. Didn't know it existed until I opened the spreadsheet.
John, we're just going to have to go to a parking lot and fight about it then.
You know, I think this isn't the hill I want to die on. I will die on a hill with Alive, but it will be at a time and place of my choosing, and it will be an elimination scenario for your movie. So I am happy to...
Wrong, but I just watched it again. You're wrong. Oh, this is going to be good. All right.
You're going to make me watch it again. I can tell, and that's fine. But I think that I will allow you the courtesy and respect of being the expert on #Alive. What a stupid fucking title. But anyway.
I mean, it's got to be a comedy.
It's relevant, John.
It's got #Alive in the title. It's got to be ridiculous.
It's trending on X.
Right, right.
Hey, Luke, I love you. You have to watch it. You have to watch it before you say that. I'm telling you, I think you're gonna like it. Trevor, you too. John, go to hell.
So no, I will. What I was saying is, I will extend you the courtesy, Vic. You may put it wherever you want, okay, and possibly up your ass, as far as I'm concerned.
That's where I thought that was going. Yeah.
It did go there.
Oy vey. Well, but the problem is, so we move it out of this category, which I don't feel as strongly about as I did Train to Busan. Is there another film that fits into the funnies bracket?
Well, this is a good place to consult Trevor. Like, if you had any movies that you were like, oh, they haven't talked about this one, like, I might want to mention it as a nomination. Do you have any that would be funnies, potentially?
You've got the big one for me. Obviously, Shaun of the Dead, I can talk about that movie till we're all dead. And then Dead Alive, I've seen enough, which was once or twice, I think. And Zombieland, of course, is a classic. I that's one of the things. Yeah. I definitely like the first one more than the second one, which I'm glad that Double Tap didn't make the list. Thank you for that. A lot of these I haven't seen, though. And I started watching the first Dead Snow, and I was like, no, thank you. And so the fact that the sequel is on here is probably going to need some justification for me to even consider looking at that, because the first one was... A personal opinion, really bad. And it felt like it was basically like a spinoff of, I don't know why, I think it was the Nazi thing. I felt like a spinoff of Iron Sky or something like that. Like, I just could not figure out where this movie was coming from.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the first one, Dead Snow, is a great movie. I just kind of thought, let me tell you one of my criteria for this, at least this stage of the process, is if there is even one scene that kind of deserves its place in the annals of zombie movie lore, where, like, that's a standout. And if you like zombie movies, watch it for that scene. I think it has that. And I'm talking about the extended outhouse sequence in Dead Snow. And I won't get into too many spoilers. This is technically a non-spoiler show, by the way, of course, to the listeners. There is a bit of business where, like, the movie nerd goes into the outhouse, and the pretty girl comes to visit him for a romantic interlude while he's on the toilet. And then the zombies start to, yes, fake was making a crude hand gesture. The zombies end up interjecting themselves in this situation. And I just thought it was a very memorable sort of horror comedic set piece. And that's why it's in there for me. I agree. I actually tried to watch it years ago, and I bailed after 20 minutes, half an hour, just wasn't impressed. But I mean, I think when you're kind of taking the jeweler's loop to this genre, like, you just are kind of looking for that one little sparkly bit of it, potentially. But no, it's not a great movie. And I'll just say quickly about the second one, doubles down on everything, like, way bigger and more comedic and goofy. And there's a lot of guest stars, and the action is, like, insane, over the top. There's like a tank going like 50 miles an hour somehow, with people fighting zombies on top of it. And I thought it was kind of a hoot. So that's why it's in there.
John, I love how this podcast, the things we're going to talk about this season, I'm just going to mention the sadness again, right? And you could not say, you could not bring yourself to say that she went into that outhouse to fuck him.
She did, by the way.
She did. But I didn't think of you as being so puritanical, so prudish.
It's my first beer. I mean, we'll talk about skull fucking later, all right?
All right. See, I wasn't gonna go there, John. I was saving that, and now you fine. I will. You know what? I thought of this while you were talking. How about if we were to move hashtag alive, let's say, to crazies, just because I know we have open spots there. And it's I think a thin line between 28 days later and hashtag alive. I'm not quite sure what the criteria are.
I'm going to draw the line just for a quick moment. And I asked you about this, but you say you just saw it again. So I'm going to hold you to this, man.
Okay.
Are they dead or are they not? And I mean, I'm just saying, I want the record to show that would be the one movie in the crazies bracket where they're normal dead zombies. And so I don't love the symmetry of that personally. If there's any way we could not do that, I would be thrilled about it, because they don't fit the definition of the category to me.
They are fast zombies, and they are
not the question.
They are the victims of, I don't know, man. Okay.
Why do you want them in that bracket so bad? We got three brackets.
Tell them, like, there's open spots. I don't want to kick anything out of the other bracket.
Oh, there's no other open spots? How about Dark Horse? Like, Dark Horse is the really one size fits all, or, you know, miscellaneous category.
All right.
Like, there's no rules.
Sit in Dark Horse. Hang on.
Okay.
But I'm going to nominate, if we're going to open up a spot in the funnies, I'm going to nominate Anna and the Apocalypse.
Okay.
I would counter nominate One Cut of the Dead.
Ooh,
oh, okay. I'm sorry, Luke. I meant to put that in there.
Ah.
And I even told Luke it would be in there. So, mea culpa, my friend.
Have you seen either of those?
Yeah, I've seen both of them. As you both know, as Vic and John both know, I can't stand musicals. Like, it is nails on a chalkboard for me, but I do respect it. I will say that One Cut of the Dead, if I'm saying it correctly, I saw mm-hmm. that actually relatively recently. And the real question is if we're going with kind of Vic's kind of wheelhouse of saying whether it's a zombie film or not, is it a zombie film? Because it's so meta, and in the end of the day, they're not actually zombies. So, I'm sorry, that is a spoiler. Feel free to cut Ooh. That out, John. that's like
a 30 minutes in spoiler. That's not like okay. an end of the movie spoiler.
But that's kind of my point, though, is that at the end of the day, it's very well done. It's so, again, very smart the way that they did it. And it keeps you questioning through the entire thing. It's absolutely worth watching. But if we're going to be puritanical about this, are they actually zombies?
Well, if you ask John about It Comes at Night, there don't have to be zombies.
Hey, now that is if it acts like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. I mean,
it's only a zombie duck if it's eating other ducks. So. Yeah.
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, I think The Crazies is a fair place for it, because as you'll see, if you look at the movies that we have in The Crazies, and I'm, by the way, listeners, if you're frustrated that we're not like just listing all of the movies, have patience. You know, this is a long process. This is sort of a tease, this whole show. Yes, you'll get to know a lot of the movies in the tournament, but no, we're not here to just talk about every single movie in the tournament. That's not what we're doing. But don't worry, we will introduce everything soon enough. But if you look at these movies, like, there's every flavor of insane virus being of some kind or another being passed around and affecting people's behavior and their sanity in messed up ways. And I think it definitely fits into that paradigm.
Okay. Luke, what is your defense of One Cut of the Dead?
I think the reveal comes later than half an hour, but I'm not really sure, because now it's been a while since I saw it. So my defense is going to be flawed, but I feel like it kept me going. It kept me on the edge of my seat for different reasons throughout. So for a while, kept me on the edge of my seat because I thought, oh, their lives are in danger and I don't know where the danger is coming from and what they're going to get hit with next. And then later I was on the edge of my seat because of all the meta aspects of like, how are they going to pull this off? So it did switch. But it works in both ways for me. And even when it's working the second way, it's still a zombie movie. But it's a zombie movie. Does that make sense?
I would just want to say, I don't have really strong feelings or memories about either Anna and the Apocalypse or One Cut of the Dead. But please don't tell your wife, Vic. I did not like Anna and the Apocalypse at all when we watched it together.
She was the one who was like, where is Anna and the Apocalypse in the competition?
No,
I was like,
trust
oh,
me.
Not.
Yeah, I am well aware of her feelings about Anna and the Apocalypse, but I do not share them. And I have discreetly not overly, you know, pressed those thoughts on her. That sounds worse than it is. Sorry. But anyway.
Please don't press any of your thoughts on my wife, John. Okay.
Yes, that's good advice. But no, I just didn't like it. And I would give it another look. But yeah, Trevor, the whole musical thing, like, you already like 90% lost me right there. And it just the other 10% weren't enough to bring me back. And to be quite frank, I didn't love One Cut of the Dead either. But I liked it a little bit more. I think there's a little more meat on the bone there. I would be more willing to give it for further consideration.
Oh my God, I'm flabbergasted. And look, I want to be clear. This is nothing against One Cut of the Dead. I really enjoyed that movie. I think it's terrific. It's weirdly heartwarming. Like, I was 100% on board with it. But it's not a zombie movie. There aren't any zombies in it.
I liked it so much when I saw it that I made the mistake of not rewatching it right before this podcast. So now I wish I had, because I wish I could talk about it in a little more detail. To me, it was a zombie movie all the way through. It really was. But I haven't seen Anna and the Apocalypse. So if we're trying to decide which of the two movies goes in there, I'm not really qualified to make a call between the two.
Well, the one thing I hate to say this, but I mean, it would be a knockout blow if no one can make a case for it being a zombie movie.
Well,
I mean, say what you want about Anna and the Apocalypse. I will acknowledge it is technically a zombie movie.
I really should have watched it this afternoon.
And well, John, I don't know that it would matter, Luke. It doesn't sound like it is a zombie movie. I mean, if you come if you come back tomorrow, Luke, and say, guys, it is a zombie movie, smoking crack, they are zombies, then great. Okay, it's in. Okay. But let's pencil in Anna and the Apocalypse.
Oh, I was going to take tomorrow and not watch zombie movies for the first time in 72 hours. I've been watching
zombie movies
like
crazy.
Luke, yeah, welcome to the podcast, buddy.
You know what you signed up for.
I will rewatch it, and then I will make my belated case. But I would love to have watched it this afternoon and then cave with full confidence right now. I wish that I could crumble with confidence, confidently crumble.
I mean, look, what I will tell you from my memory of it, and I know this is spoiler free, but again, I feel like this is not the end of the movie. I'm going to say, it is a movie about making a zombie movie.
Well, for sure.
And it's awesome, and that's great. But no one in the movie is actually a zombie. And Anna and the Apocalypse is actually about zombies.
All right. I remember that reveal coming much later in the movie. So I remember feeling tension that they would be killed.
John, I will tell you that Anna and the Apocalypse, one of those movies that has grown on me every time I've watched it. That my initial reaction, I'm also not a huge musical fan, although I've gotten in my old age, I've become a little bit more amenable to it. But the more that I've watched it, the more I have come to admire it. I think it merits some discussion in this competition.
Okay. All right. Well,
sinking feeling about One Cut of the Dead.
And I will just say, Luke, if you don't like dispute that at the end of the day, it's not a zombie movie. It's whether well the first 40 minutes, it's still a zombie movie. I think that's kind of the same flip side of the argument I made with Cabin in the Woods, which is, the first half an hour, you totally think it's a zombie movie. But then, you know, by the end, you know, it's not a zombie movie. So I think that is kind of an important criteria. It needs to be a zombie movie after you've seen it and you look at the whole thing.
Maybe it needs to be filed under family comedies, not zombie horror movies. I'll give that some thought, and I'll come back to you after I've watched it and can sound like an intelligent person.
I mean, and another question, is it even a horror movie at all? Like, I do think the one thing about March Mad Men is these should be horror movies. And yeah, it's a little shaky with Shaun of the Dead or something like that, but there's plenty of horror. It's not just a parody of a zombie movie. Shaun of the Dead, and Trevor, weigh in if you'd like. It still functions as a zombie movie, am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, at its core, it is basically a slice of life every day. It's like they say, it's a rom-com zom. It's a romantic comedy during the zombie apocalypse. And there are a lot of really good staples a lot of staples are hit by that movie that are definitely in the zombie wheelhouse. You know, there's jump scares, there's gore, there's horror. But at the same time, they're like, the characters have emotional arcs and they learn things and they grow as characters, which is not something that you always see in like your lower budget, like tits and gore kind of zombie film. And that's one of the things I really like about it. Plus, I mean, I could go all day about cyclical writing with Mr. Wright. That's the hill I'll die on. I will say that Shaun of the Dead is definitely a zombie film.
Wow. All right. You heard it here first. And Edgar Wright superfan Trevor Stevenson weighing in. No, I like it. I like it. I like it a lot. And has anyone seen Warm Bodies? Because I didn't.
Yes, okay. I was going to bring that up. I have like a list of three films that aren't on the bracket that are kind of aren't necessarily, again, the like gore kind of aspect of it. But it's like, I think I saw on the initial list, we talked about Maggie. Like, I think Maggie is a fantastic film. Okay. Little Monsters is more in the gore category, but it's hilarious and a lot of fun. And then Warm Bodies is fantastic. When was the last time you saw a zombie film that had a warm, fuzzy ending?
Right. Right. And this is kind of the category for these movies, I think. Like, this is where they would fit in. I meant to watch Warm Bodies. I meant to watch Little Monsters. I'd forgotten about Maggie. So I'm definitely putting a pin in the map there. I like those recommendations. Let's look at some of the lower ones in this bracket. Cemetery Man, have you guys seen that? Cemetery Man, no one's seen it? No one's seen it. Wow.
I watched the first 10 minutes or so, but I didn't get back to it yet. I like the first 10 minutes. It's charming.
Mm-hmm. You were going to say something?
I think I saw it like 20 years ago. Is it Rupert Everett?
Yes. It's very weird and surrealistic, kind of more in the Guillermo del Toro vibe in some ways, but not as striking with its creations as far as the monsters and zombies and all of that kind of thing. And it's not like super funny, but it's just kind of a weird, arty, it's a unique take on zombies, I would say. And it's somewhat, I feel like, a little bit like Dead Alive in some ways, not like the over the top bananas outrageous, you know, dark comedy, but just a little bit like that. I want to revisit that. I mean, again, we don't have to settle everything right now, so let's not knock that one out yet, since put that one on the possible list along with Warm Bodies, Maggie, and Little Monsters. How about Slither? Does anyone have any opinions about Slither?
Love that movie.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Love the movie. Are they zombies?
That's a worthy conversation.
Yeah, because you could argue that they're technically a hive mind, essentially, and not necessarily zombies, because they're all following Michael Rooker's character towards the end when they're possessed and they're doing what his bidding, and they all take pain together at the same time. Dude, I feel like I'm ruining this whole no spoilers thing. I'm so sorry about that.
I don't think that's a big deal.
Okay, because that's in the third act. So at any rate, I don't consider them dead. Although I guess in the closing credits, none of them are getting back up, are they?
When Michael Rooker first gets implanted with the brain worm, they do a thing where they show it going in. They switch to like an X-ray view of his body. So you see the worm go up his spine into his brain, and you see his brain kind of pop inside his skull. So he's definitely dead as soon as that worm gets in there. And I guess it knows how to talk, and it knows when he meets people, it knows who they are. So it must have his memories. But I think he's pretty thoroughly dead. So I would say that qualifies them as your traditional undead zombies with a twist.
It feels like a cousin of Night of the Creeps in some ways. Like, if we're going to go with Night of the Creeps, we should probably go with this as a zombie movie. Yeah. I mean, this is a very strong category, as it turns out. Dead Snow 2 is actually not looking too good, but I want somebody to see it.
Watch it. And I'm here for you.
Okay. Oh, Dead Heat. Yeah, that. Has anyone seen Dead Heat?
Yes.
Dead Heat is Treat Williams. Okay, good. Treat Williams and Joe Piscopo. When I was a kid, I loved this movie. It is not objectively good, but it has batshit gonzo stuff in it and Darren McGavin and all kinds of fun cameos. And like, it's a fucking hoot, man. Like, this movie, it's just so 80s. Like, it's a big block of delicious cheese. So I wanted it to have a presence here. You know, I can't make a super strong case for it. So we've got four potentials, one of which is already in the bracket. We've got some work to do there. Any final thoughts before we just move on from this conversation for now? Because it looks like we're going to have to go do some homework before we finalize this.
I would back you on Dead Heat because it does some stuff that I've never seen a zombie movie do before. I mean, you've got a cop who becomes a zombie and then uses that as a tool of like being an invulnerable cop. Now he can get shot a million times. He's not worried about anything. That's great. I never saw anything like that before.
And, you know, as kind of cheesy as the movie is, I think there's something really affecting about him understanding this is his last day on Earth and the fun that they have with that. It's actually, there's a little bit, it's a little sad. It's a little bit of a metaphor for the, you know, the brevity of mortality.
And there's also some absolutely amazing practical effects in it.
Yes.
And
Steve Johnson, I believe.
Oh, really? Okay. Memorable scenes. At least two that I can think of offhand that will stick, I think, for a long time. That's a great movie. It's not a great movie. It's a bad movie. But it's a great movie to get a bunch of beer and watch with some friends.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's the slasher season. I mean, we let a lot of movies that were no better than that in some kind of Academy Awards kind of conversation go a long way in the tournament, because they're fun to talk about and amusing and interesting and unique somehow. So anybody else? Should we move on?
You had me at Treat Williams and Joe Piscopo.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So Crazies, back to the Crazies. I'm looking at the titles now. I just saw The Signal the other night. I won't say anything yet. Does anyone else want to say anything about The Signal?
I saw it in a movie theater when I was unemployed on a Tuesday. I was the only person in the movie theater. And I found, if I recall correctly, the first two parts really disturbing and the third part less so. But I think it definitely qualifies as a zombie movie. I'm kind of okay with this seating, unless anybody feels strongly the other way.
I would put it higher. I really enjoyed it. I found it thoroughly enjoyable front to back. But I only saw it once, and I would love to watch it a second time. It was a movie that I think would warrant a second viewing, would still be fun. I would put it higher than 13, but I'm not upset that it's at 13.
Am I correct? Didn't David Bruckner do one of the segments? Yeah.
He sure did. And it has a very like ultra indie kind of low budget vibe, but yet there's some, you know, faces in there that are immediately recognizable now, and some real talent associated with it that have gone on to other things. Weirdly, like I just was looking for the name of the guy that I'm forgetting, and there's another movie called The Signal that just completely dominates the Google. I guess it's a mini series, but I can't even immediately dial it up. But you know, the guy from House of the Devil. His name is A.J. Bowen. A.J. Bowen, isn't it? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's an anthology. So the first one was David Bruckner, and then other directors did the... But they're all... It's weird. It is a feature. It doesn't feel anthology-like. It's very strange to have three different directors splitting up this movie. But no, I tend to agree a little bit with Luke. I think it could go higher, honestly. It's something very interesting about it. All right. Well, I just want to note, because I just saw this one as well, and I didn't know how I felt about it, but I just watched The Girl with All the Gifts again. And I did walk away with a more clarified opinion of it. Who's its champion here? Is it you, Vic?
It's clearly a zombie movie, and it has an original take on it, I feel like, compared to many of the zombie movies that are in here. If I recall correctly, the third act did not wow me. But if we cut every movie that didn't wow us in the third act, we would have a very, very short podcast in every season. So I think there's some. It's the only zombie movie with Glenn Close in it. You know, that's yes. A thing.
And she's great. Absolutely. You know, yeah. What it reminds me of? I hadn't seen, because it didn't exist yet. Well, the video game did. But The Last of Us is very similar to The Girl with All the Gifts, but it came before. Maybe it didn't come before the video game. But there's a Trevor. What are you thinking there? Are you questioning that?
What year did it come out?
Well, the movie. Yeah, I mean, The Last of Us was quite some time ago, but the game.
Yeah.
Let me see. Girl with All the Gifts was 2016.
Yeah, it was 3 years after The Last of Us.
Ooh. All right. Points off. Points off for Girl with All the Gifts.
Now wait. The Girl with All the Gifts is based on a book. When did the book come out?
Oh, shit. Vic coming in with the save.
Wheels within
Let's
wheels.
See. I am almost there, folks.
Wait.
Efforting.
Okay. 2014. Boom!
That's still a year after The Last of Us.
That's not the point.
When was it pitched?
I mean, also, let's point out the fact of how long it takes to make full motion capture video games. It takes years, so...
Well, and how long does it take to write a book?
It depends upon how the quality of the book, I suppose.
The writer was cooking this up in the late 80s, I know for a fact. No, okay. Yeah, I mean, like, putting aside that, we're joking. But I did notice a lot of similarities that slightly diminished the originality for me, but... I agree, Vic. I was really into it. Like the first act, I'm like, God, why did I not remember this movie more favorably? But then by the end, I was kind of like, oh yeah, no, yeah, I was pretty much right. You know, liked it, but didn't love it. So, okay. Yeah. I don't know that we have anything to debate right there. I will say to Vic's point, we have three open spots in the crazies. So one way or another, we're going to have to figure that out. Kind of keep that in mind as we move forward. Let's get out of the bracket for a little while and open it up back to, you know, zombies in general, because I wanted to, before we get too sleepy and drunk and whatnot, explore this a little bit. And then we'll double back and we'll finish up the other side of the bracket later. What is it about zombies that excite you guys as far as a season of this show or to just a subject for horror movies, I guess, that you gravitate towards? Trevor, how do you like view it? Are there other subgenres you're more partial to, or where does it fit into your own personal hierarchy?
I mean, my personal taste, you've already heard me stand on my stupid little hill about Shaun of the Dead. Absolutely love that film. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel like, I was doing research because I didn't want to sound like a complete idiot in front of you gentlemen. I was kind of researching like where the whole zombie film genre comes from. And of course, we all know that the first one was White Zombie, the basis for the name of the band in 1932. But what I didn't know is that the whole zombie aspect of pop culture originated with the American occupation of Haiti. Did you guys know this? Yeah, because that's where like that's where voodoo essentially came into the main popular culture, which somebody who was stationed in Haiti at the time wrote some memoirs about it. And consequently, they brought that over to American popular culture and people started reading about this voodoo aspect. And then that's when we started getting into it. And then like anything that Americans do, it starts becoming an allegory for what we're scared of and mm-hmm. what it means to be human along those lines. And it's reflected upon the culture, the cultural fears of the time. So like 1930s, right, we're dealing with like invaders, right? That's kind of the thing that we're worried about. Different belief systems are terrifying to us at that time. And then you get into the 40s and the 50s and it's like, oh, it's the atomic age, it's radiation, right? And then this is one of the criteria that we were talking about is like the virus aspect of it. That didn't really become a thing until I think it was Plague of the Zombies in 1966. That was the first time that they ever said that the zombification was spread by a virus instead of mysticism or something along those lines. So I thought that was a real cool aspect. And then of course, one of the things I'm shocked of is that we don't have Night of the Living Dead or either one of Dawn of the Dead on here. Like, we're going to have to talk about that in a minute.
It's on the other side of the bracket, on the other side of the bracket.
Oh, there's another side of the bracket.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
I realized it. Yeah, yeah. It's
okay.
A large
for the listener audience,
he's looking
I'm
at.
An idiot.
Yeah. No, no. It's
okay.
Funny because
I did the same
just
thing.
Picture.
Like, what the hell happened to half the movies?
Picture this, listeners, this giant Google sheet. And on one side, we have the two brackets we've been talking about. And then, like, you have to go through a ton of columns to get to the other side because we needed to make enough room so that as the movies advance, there would be a room for them to advance. So, yes, on the far right, we have another 32 movies.
Okay. Thank you. I was real worried. And you've got Dead Curl on here, too. I was going to bring that up later. So anyway, getting back to the history of it. I realize I'm talking a lot, so you guys feel free to chime in and say anything that
this
you want.
This is fantastic.
Okay. The thing was, of course, in the 1960s, and we saw this with Night of the Living Dead, it was a lot of allegory for civil rights and for the Vietnam War. And we see that with Night of the Living Dead. And it's also people were talking about the fact that it was the first time that Americans were seeing how raw combat was because footage from the Tet Offensive was being broadcast and people were seeing dead bodies on TV. And so consequently, that fed into a lot of fears of the American populace at the time. And so Night of the Living Dead comes around and people are like, oh my God, it's like terrifying. And of course, it was breaking open the genre even more to the popular culture. And then, of course, we get into the 70s and we start talking about capitalism and the blind consumerism of the 70s, which is reflected in Dawn of the Dead. And then 80s, we've got the AIDS epidemic, right? And that's how that's like, it's another, I don't want to say pandemic, because I feel like that word has been used too much in the past 4 years, but it was a pandemic that it was terrifying people. They didn't understand what was happening. And so we see another resurgence in kind of the zombie genre there for the virus aspect of it. I can't wait to talk about Resident Evil, because I've played so many of those games, but that's the point where in the 90s they start talking about Big Pharma being a problem for it. In the video games, Big Pharma is responsible for the zombie, the T virus. It's been a while since I played games. Also, the games have gotten way off track since the first Resident Evil, so we don't have to talk about that if we don't have to. But what's fascinating about that to me, and I swear to God this is on topic, is that pop culture sensations like this are always reflective of what people are afraid of. And my example here is Lex Luthor in the comics. In the 1950s and 60s, he was a scientist. And that's when we were scared of like nuclear war along those lines. In the 90s, he becomes a big business person. And he's like the corporate executive and reflecting the fear there. And then in the 2000s, he becomes a politician. And so I feel like there's some sort of parallel there with our fears being reflected in zombie films along those lines, the way that Lex Luthor is in the comics.
Oh, I totally see it.
Pause for some water. Discuss amongst yourself.
That was fantastic. And it resonates to such a degree that I'm like, yeah, of course I knew that, but I was not like prepared to really look at it and articulate it and see how clearly it is until you just put it out, laid it out there. It's such an ideal template. It's putty. Whatever the fears are, we can find a way to squish it into a form of zombie that will be that much more resonant for this generation and what they're dealing with in terms of their anxieties. And I can't say that that's true for slashers or haunted house movies. I mean, to a degree, I'm sure. But like, zombies are the ultimate protean mutable concept, which it can be applicable. You just see it throughout the decades. Yeah, we started off with the voodoo zombies and the sort of outsider they kind of a thing that's going on there, I suppose. And then it develops into the radiation fears, you know, and you see the zombies kind of reflect that for a couple of decades. We shift into just the, you know, the horrible squeamishness of just dead bodies, like you're saying with Vietnam. I think that's what really made Night of the Living Dead such a success, probably, on at least on that level. You start to lean more into the infectious part, and that's clearly been something that's resonated a lot more in the last 5 years than it did before. It's all right there, and that's part of what makes this such a fascinating thing, because you're finding out about the culture and the times when you look at a zombie movie made in that period, and that's really interesting.
It occurs to me, Trevor, listening to you, that zombies are for America what Godzilla is to Japan. Godzilla starts off as the terror of the atomic weapon, and then Godzilla becomes an ally, but we have to tame them, and the sort of metaphorical meaning of Godzilla shifts as Japan's relationship with the West shifts. And that's, I mean, again, it's not a direct correlation, but the fact that Godzilla just becomes a metaphor for whatever's happening socially in that side of the ocean, and zombies become a metaphor. And what's interesting is that it spreads to, you know, other countries, and pretty soon you've got French zombie films and German zombie films and Spanish zombie films, and they all take them and mold them into the metaphors for whatever's going on in their society. One of the films that's on our list, I think, is Valley of the Dead, which is a film set during the Spanish Revolution. There's all kinds of political stuff wrapped up in this story of a bunch of soldiers who get stuck in a valley with zombies. And it just dawned on me that, yeah, like it's one of those malleable narrative constructs that you can use in any society. The various Asian cultures picked it up as well. It's definitely interesting if for no other reason than for its metaphorical capabilities.
It's official. Americans do not have any kind of copyright on zombies at this point. Like, I would say the slasher film, I still kind of associate with American culture. At this point, no. Zombie movies have completely become a global phenomenon. And, you know, Vic, I appreciate sticking in my craw saying this a little bit, but I appreciate how many Asian zombie films you have injected into this tournament that I may not necessarily have found, because I'm sort of more the old school guy, and a lot of my nominees are from years ago. And so you found like 10, 15 really interesting Asian zombie movies of the last decade and a half or so, and that's awesome. And I think they have taken the mantle.
Zombies become a great index to where everything is right now. And that's been true for 40 years, you know, 50 years at this point, more than that. It's partly because when you look at other classic monsters like vampires, werewolves, the mummy or whatever, they're all individuals. So you can write a movie that's a vampire movie that is different. It would be different in the 60s than it would be in the 90s and so on and so forth. They'll all reflect their culture to some extent, but they're about individuals, whereas the zombie movie is about a mob. It's about a crowd, right? It's about where the whole civilization is. So it just explicitly has been that for my whole lifetime. And I've liked zombie movies myself. To go to, when did I start liking them? I guess I was about 15, and that was just a great year for zombies, because I think that was the year I saw Night of the Living Dead, Night of the Creeps, Night of the Comet, a lot of Night Ofs, but they all came right at age 15. I was, you know, committed from there on pretty much to just follow zombies wherever they would go. One thing I do think is interesting also that someone pointed out, I don't remember where I heard this. I think on a radio show, a radio interview somewhere, and I don't remember who it was with, but they said what makes zombies so frightening is that in evolutionary terms, they replace us, because they're the only predator that works the same way the human race does, which is we are not super fast, but other things can outrun us, but then they need to rest. They can outrun us for 15 minutes, but then they stop and they lay down and they take a nap. And we just keep plodding forward. So that's how we apparently evolved to do that. That was the ace up our sleeves, you know, 2 million years ago. That's how we were hunters. And zombies do that, but even more so than we do. And that is on some level potentially like terrifying, that we can't, what we're so good at, and here's something that's better at it and using it against us. Because they don't need to rest at all, ever. I don't know. I find that a fascinating idea. And I think about that a lot when I watch these movies, about how people, they make a getaway, but you can't stop. They're going to catch up with you. You will be mobbed at some point by more zombies.
You just hit on like the underlying terror, the existential terror of zombies, is that there's a mob, an army. As they claim lives, they get more multiple, like the dead join their army. And yes, they never tire, they never rest, they never give up. And that wave of endless attackers is just terrifying. And you kind of know you're doomed. Like, eventually you're going to sleep, you're going to be outnumbered, you're going to be outgunned. And we have all these little fantasies of setting up the fort, and you've got your security, and everything looks safe, but there's going to be that board that's loose, or, you know, that person who freaks out and does something stupid or selfish or crazy. And it's just like all of the fears of a situation that has too many variables to possibly be controlled 24 hours a day.
So all the little flaws in civilization, we're depending on everyone holding their shit together constantly, and it's never going to happen. Something's going to fall apart.
It's all, yeah, the destruction of the social contract is another huge part of it.
Yeah, there's so many dimensions to it. It's an amazing, amazing subgenre of horror.
One of the things that I'm most excited about with this season is finding all the tropes and trends that we've identified in previous seasons, kind of only by looking at all these movies with this kind of insane focus. Because, you know, people laugh, like Mike, who's on the show a lot. He's like, oh, really? Took you a year and a half to decide Texas Chainsaw Massacre was the best slasher movie, huh? Like, well, he's not wrong, but Vic thinks he's wrong. Vic thinks he's wrong. Yeah. But in going through that whole process, we have an understanding of what makes a slasher movie tick and what the most critical, essential characteristics of a great one are than we ever would otherwise. That's the real benefit of this process. It's not to say at the end, oh, well, we have ordained this movie and now the rest of the world will clearly acknowledge our decision. No, that's probably not happening. But the journey for all of us, listeners too, clearly, is what is the value of it, because you end up understanding this stuff on the deep dive. You reveal the connections that you hadn't noticed, the themes, the ideas, the cultural cross currents that may have never stood out to you before. That is what I love. That is where you level up in your knowledge of this genre and your appreciation of it. And that's what I'm really looking forward to.
Is it time to open that beer?
It is, Trevor. I'm going to go get mine.
All right, March Mad Men listeners, if you want to grab a beer too, go right ahead. Obviously, we took a break at that point in the pod, so let's do the same right now, shall we? Hope you've enjoyed the season premiere so far. We'll be back soon for the second half. If you like the show, of course, please do reach out to me on X at @JohnF_Evans. Post a review wherever you found us, or just tell a friend. Thanks so much for listening, though. And until next time, adios. Vader.